RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice. Welcome back, everybody, to the third season of Green Justice and Arrow Podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
And I'm Josh.
And you've discovered the number one podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow, with discussion and commentary on all the various episodes. And, boy, it seems like a long time coming, and this first episode of season three, which I can't believe we're saying that already, seems like it just debuted, the other week, but they came out of the starting gate strong here. This was a really interesting, vibrant, and unexpected episode, and I think we're going to cover all of those aspects of it on today's show.
They're not pulling any punches.
No, and of course, I think the title kind of belays a little bit of what was coming in the episode. It was called The Calm, and of course, the first thing I thought about is, Before the Storm. So I was thinking the next episode is going to be called The Storm, but it doesn't appear to be, but I thought that would be kind of funny.
Maybe it's just called Before.
Maybe it is called Before. No, unless they change it, it's not going to be called that. They've got another. I think they're going another direction with that.
Oh, okay.
Hey, thanks for stopping by. So, all right. So, why don't you give us the outline, the brief on this episode, and we'll get started.
All right, 10-4, or is it Roger?
I always get those confused. I think it's 10-4.
Okay. All right. Roger. All right. So we're talking about Episode 1 of Season 3, man, I've been looking forward to this for a long time. The Calm, as you said, aired on October 8th, 2014. Now, this season premiere was actually written by Greg Berlanti and Andrew Kreisberg. Excellent job. But the teleplay itself was written by Mark Guggenheim and Jake Coburn. So, man, they're getting the A-team there on the writing.
Mm-hmm.
Directed by Glenn Winter. Now, life is really looking up in Starling City. It's been a good summer, seems. Team Arrow is taking down crime like a well-oiled machine. Now, I'm not sure where they're getting the money to buy that oil, but, Oliver, he's kind of out of work these days. But never fear, he's going to try to make a bid to return to Queen Consolidated, with Felicity's help, of course, and her new job at Best Buy, or, whatever.
I think it was Tech Shack or something like that.
Tech Shack, yeah. but they may have a little competition in the form of a very charismatic man of steel named Ray Palmer. No, what is that?
That was just a theme song I was thinking we could play for Ray Palmer.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, anyway, yeah, this Ray Palmer guy, I don't know who he is, but he's very tall.
He's as tall as Oliver, and Oliver's pretty tall.
Yeah, just walking with Felicity down that hallway there, I'm like, wow, that guy is huge. meanwhile, now back at the Arrow Cave, Diggle, he's been benched by Coach Oliver because of some upcoming baby responsibilities. And he's not very happy about that either, by the way. But, he'll get over it, I think. Now, Felicity, she's looking pretty scrumptious to our former millionaire playboy. So you know what he does? He finally gets the nerve to ask her out on a date. Yeah. And things seem to be just going so well, But everything can't stay warm and fuzzy forever. There's a new count in town. Mm-hmm. Count Vertigo. The new Count Vertigo. He wants to take down the Arrow, and he doesn't care how many boxing matches it takes to do it. So maybe Oliver can count on Sarah to come to his rescue. She's always going to be there for him, right? Right?
Sure.
Right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, she will.
Okay.
It's okay, Josh.
Okay. All right.
Breathe.
I'm going to get through this.
Yeah. Oh, it's... Yeah, that
I don't want to dwell on that part. We'll get to that soon enough. That was sad.
But there was happy stuff. Let's talk about happy stuff first.
The count is great too. I think having Peter Stormare in this episode, I think, really beefs it up a lot. But we'll get into talking about that in just a second here. I just want to give a couple pieces of news. The ratings are in for the premiere, and the show was a huge hit, which I guess it would probably be like a moderate hit for, you know, other networks like any of the big three or big four. But for CW, this is pretty big. Nearly 2.8 million viewers and a 1.0/3, whatever that means, in the 18 to 49 demographic watched this show, and that may actually go up a little bit. They also showed a repeat of the Flash episode, which was, I guess, that was the biggest premiere of a series in 5 years since The Vampire Diaries. And I think we were saying the same thing 3 years ago about Arrow. So The Flash actually beat Arrow in terms of its initial ratings. And The Flash got another 2.09 million viewers with its repeat showing after Arrow wow. the other night. So
that's good incredible. Marketing right there.
Yeah.
Putting it on again after Arrow, just in case people didn't decide to watch it the night before. Clearly a lot of people decided to watch it, but those that might have been on the fence about it could just, hey, just keep it on. So
yeah, I mean, it's a great way to do it, and based on some of the stuff that happened in this episode, I think it would have been better to see the Arrow episode and then the Flash episode. Just chronologically, they seem to work in that order. And now that we're in a shared universe, I feel like every episode of the shows are going to relate to the other one in some fashion, but I guess we'll see. Also, I don't know if people saw this, and if you're fans of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they were doing this at the end of last season, and so the first episode of Arrow had a comic-style poster made for it that actually looks like... it looks like a comic book cover. It actually looks like a vintage comic book cover. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And it has Oliver Queen punching out the Arrow. And it says, Arrow faces his greatest fear in a tale we just had to call Arrow versus Oliver. And it's got the trippy lines, the swirly lines in the background like Vertigo, because it says featuring the new and improved Vertigo. So that's really cool.
I love that they made it look so vintage.
Yeah, well, like the corners are torn and faded logos and stuff on it. I'm just wondering if this weekend at New York Comic Con, if this is going to be like a poster that they're handing out. That would be pretty cool. Unfortunately, I'm not there to get one. Maybe we know somebody that would find one for us. That would be pretty nice. But you can at least take it and put it on your desktop if you wanted to.
There you go.
So
your phone background.
Oh, yeah, your phone background, that would work too, or your iPad or something like that. So, all right, well, you ready to talk about The Calm?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's get into this. Let's get into this show and this season, because I think this season's going to be even more intense than last season, and that's
a pretty
hard
something.
Mountain to climb. Yeah.
I say there's lack of leadership. I nominate myself. Any objections? So
I'm good.
that's my best worst version of impersonation of Vertigo. I guess he was calling himself Vertigo in this episode.
Yeah,
because he said the Count was dead, and he's calling himself Vertigo now. So, like you mentioned in the little piece at the beginning, everything is great at the beginning of this episode, and of course that just sets me right on edge because you know. Oliver's doing good, and Diggle's doing good, and Laurel's doing good, and the chief or the captain, Captain Lance is doing great. It's just everything's working out swell for everybody, except you know until this episode started up, and then it all turns to crap. So, let's see. I think some of the things that we want to touch on. So we've got Lance, who who is now captain, he was ill at the end of the season finale, and it seemed like they left us in a really bad place with him. I know you and I were both concerned about, like, what were they doing with this character, and, you know, it's just, it's 5 months later, and boom, he's okay. He's captain, and he's given press conferences and stuff like that, and they don't really talk too much. I mean, there's one, I think there's just one scene with Laurel when he has a relapse and goes into the hospital where they talk about what had happened to him before. But, you know, do you, like, what are your thoughts about him as captain now? It's it seems like it's for the best.
Yeah, well, he totally deserves it, first of all. I mean, he's probably done more for the city than anybody on the police force. But it was kind of an interesting transition, considering they ended last year. It seemed so dramatic and so dire with him. And it sounds like it probably was. He in the hospital for a while. But then I don't know. Like, I think they kind of should have addressed that a little bit more, what happened and how he got out and what specifically were his issues, so we could kind of keep an eye on why he was doing that. I was very concerned when he kept going out in the field, and I mean, it was clear he shouldn't be there.
Right.
So you knew something bad was going to happen.
They had talked about using the Arrow Season 2.5 comic books that are being published currently, physically and digitally. I think they're going to be a total of 6 digital issues. The first 3 are out right now. They were talking about using those to kind of fill in some of the gaps. But of the 3 issues that are out, I don't recall any of them dealing with Lance. They're more Oliver and Roy. And then a villain who's not Vertigo, at least in the ones that I've seen so far. So they may be dealing with that as the rest come out. But yeah, they really left his storyline at a strange place at the end of last season. It felt like they just, oh, we're doing all this other cool stuff with the Mirakuru, and then, oh shoot, we kind of ran out of time, and all right, we just need to move Lance along, and we'll deal with him. You know, and maybe they're going to go back and do some more stuff with him. I don't know if I like his new haircut, but you know,
oh,
that's...
really? Oh, see, I was really liking it. I thought it was very stylish.
That's very interesting. Yeah,
It looks, you know, yeah, he's got good taste. Looks just like mine.
Yeah, I thought you would. Yeah, I was going to say I thought you might say something like that, I guess.
just maybe not ending last season with him on the ground looking like that was the end. Him go to the hospital and get carted off or something. But I think that's going to keep going for a couple episodes here, because he is clearly messed up on the inside, and he needs to take a desk job for a while.
Well, and so, you know, he's doing okay at the beginning of this episode, and then basically by the end of the episode, he's kind of back to where we saw him at the end of last season, which he's having different issues, but obviously, you know, some heart-related issue now or something like that, I think, is what Felicity said. You know, very matter-of-factly, she knew exactly what was going wrong with him, because she probably hacked into the hospital to check out his chart or something like that.
Well, he did some good things before he had some serious hospital issues. You know, he told the city that he is disbanding the vigilante. What was it? What was the name of
task force? Task force.
That's right. Yep. So they will no longer be pursuing the Arrow,
which is cool. I mean, it's great, and that's kind of the, you know, it's, Oliver's really feeling like on top of the world. He's got, Lance has got his back. Laurel knows his secret now. So they're like tag teaming it and working to, you know, get all these criminals off the streets. He's basically been thanked and pardoned in public. And, you know, like, I think there was a line, I think it was Diggle that said, you know, we basically, things can't get any better. And it's like, dude, you just jinxed it right there. That's where everything starts getting worse.
Oh, no. See, I kind of disagree with that a little bit. I almost think what he was saying is, look, enjoy it while it lasts, because it's not going to stay like this. You know, because that's Diggle was telling Oliver that, you know, right about the time he's like, hey, look, you know, go ask Felicity out, because, you know, this is good right now.
Right.
But yeah, he did. Maybe he did jinx it, though. Just don't talk about it at all.
Yeah. Speaking of Felicity, I think a lot of the people that are what in the vernacular is known as shippers, right? People who are interested in the relationship between two characters on the show. They have this habit of combining part of one name with another. So, for example, Oliver and Felicity become Elicity, right? See how that works?
It's like, I see how that doesn't work. It sometimes works. In this case, not so much.
Well, I was going to say, it's like the electric company where they take, you know, the the two words and, like, put them together. But, you know, I think I feel like they're trying to tease the fans a little bit, but it was a real enough of scene, you know, of a scene where, okay, I think we can get a little closer. You know, I said I didn't want to get close, but you know what? Diggle was right, because like you said, you know, Diggle was the one saying, you know, you're lying to yourself, basically, to say that, you know, you're not really in love with Felicity. You know, so they get to that point where they're putting it together, and then, you know, she's, you know, all hell starts breaking loose, and she's like, you know, once you start talking, this is over. You know, and he tries to kiss her and then starts saying something. And it's like, she's like I said, as soon as you start talking, it's over. And so I don't think that these characters, I don't think these characters will ever be together, because I think it's what Oliver wants at this point, but he has enough, there's enough confusion about like what he really wants. I mean, and he's basically said so. He doesn't know who he's supposed to be, and really what he wants. And that's like why he was having these flashbacks to Hong Kong and stuff like that, I think.
In real life, you know, if I knew these people in real life, if they were my friends, I would encourage them to be together. You gotta take the good when you can. You know, there's too much bad in the world. Too much bad in people's lives. You take it when you can get it. He needs to be both. But from a story point of view, they really shouldn't be together. They need that tension. That sexual tension to create the interesting story. And a lot of shows have done that. You know, when the characters do get together, it kind of ruins that and it makes it less interesting as a show.
Moonlighting.
Yes, that's like the definition of it right there.
Yeah, I believe it is called the moonlighting effect. So, and, you know, and so, Diggle seems to, like, I'm waiting for kind of the other shoe to drop with Diggle. You know, it's like, oh, you know, Lila's just about to have this baby, and he's all stressed out about that, and Oliver's telling him, like you mentioned, though I think you were mixing your metaphors, but, you know, he was, like, benched, you know, Diggle's like in his face yelling at him, and Oliver's like, you know what, this is my team, this is my call, and you know, you're sitting this one out, which he comes to thank him for. And that's, you know, that's portion of the storyline, or that character moment in this episode seemed to work out okay. Like at this point, Diggle, he's happy. He's got a new baby. His ex-wife is okay. You know, it sounds like they are kind of getting back together. And,
it depends who you ask. If you ask his ex-wife, I'm not sure about that.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure. Like, he's happy, and I mean, and she's happy enough. You know, the doctor seems to think they were getting along, you know, okay, I guess, in that one interaction there. But, Diggle, you know, is kind of like, you know what, I'm glad you made me do this, Oliver, because, you know, my life has changed. And I feel, again, like him saying that is kind of like, cursing himself because I was talking to one of my coworkers and he said, you know, so what do you think is going to happen with him now? And I said, well, I think Diggle is going to be forced in some fashion to get back out there and put himself on the line to, you know, risk all this stuff, even though his, you know, he's got this family that he knows now he should be taking care of. The circumstances are going to take it to the point where he, you know, has to be out there, you know, fighting crime with Oliver, you know, risking his life for Oliver in some fashion, or potentially, you know, Argus is going to come for him and he can't, you know, say no, like, right. the way Waller works. She kind of just controls people. So.
Right. Well, now, again, if these people were my friends in real life, I would tell Diggle, yeah, that's right. You got to stay away from that now. But from a story point of view, like they better not be, you know, toning Diggle down. He needs to still be the bad man of the group. You know, he needs to be the tough guy. But
he's the guy that can take care. Like he takes care of the business. Like when nobody else is capable of doing it. I mean, Oliver's not really. You know, he's not a killer anymore. Roy, you know, doesn't have that edge. Felicity, definitely not. You know, Diggle, he's, you know, talks to Lila. He says, you know, he's been, what did he say? He was fighting the Mirakuru bandits. He's fought Deathstroke, you know, and like he can handle anything now. Like he's been there. He's done it all. He's been through war. He's been through hell and he's come out the other side. And, you know, now he's a changed person. Supposedly, so.
But now from a story point of view, I don't want to put too grim of a prediction on this, but I agree with you. I agree he's going to need something to get him back out there. And at this point, for me, you know, looking at where his life is leading, from a good storytelling point of view, the one thing that would be great to get him back out there is if something happened to Lila. Or the baby, or both.
Yeah.
I don't want that to happen. I think that would be horrible, but that would kind of force him to really do, I guess, kind of fulfill his destiny, I guess. Maybe not as much as Oliver, but still. I don't know. It's a very negative prediction, but...
Right. Referencing the scene immediately when Oliver shows up, you know, Oliver comes into the room at the hospital and he's like, he sees that Felicity's there and he's like, you know, I can come back. And they say, no, you know, come on in. And Diggle says, you know, thanks. And Oliver's kind of confused. He's like, for what? And he's like, you know, for being right, you know, because he was saying the second he looked at the baby, everything changed. It is, you know, his whole universe changed. So what he's saying is, having a child changes your entire out. You know, even if up until a few moments ago when I didn't have a kid, even though I knew my wife was pregnant or my, you know, my ex-wife was pregnant, I thought the world behaved and reacted in this way. But now, having looked at this baby, at this little life that I've made, everything has changed about the universe. And I'm thinking, okay, with everything else that's going on in Oliver's life right now, what did we find out last season that he doesn't know about yet?
Oh, yes, his child.
Yeah, that he has a child out there that's, so, I don't know, 6 or 7 now, I think.
Yeah, I was just thinking about 7 probably. Now, so you're thinking this is maybe some foreshadowing of what Oliver's going to have to face.
Right. So this... in a couple interviews about this season, Mark Guggenheim has talked about the fact that Oliver has to deal with identity and specifically his identity. You know, is he the Arrow? Is he Oliver Queen? Who is he? And you know, I think he's going to start getting a grasp on it. And we're going to revisit this. He's going to find out he has a child. And that will basically, you know, the whatever path he is on is going to take a sharp turn, you know, 90-degree turn, and he is going to be, you know, unable to understand what has happened to his world because it will have changed so dramatically in just a matter of seconds. And I think this is some kind of foreshadowing that that the writers are setting up for that.
I that hadn't even occurred to me. I'm glad you brought that up because now I'm really going to be watching for it.
So one other I want to talk a little bit more about the identity piece, but let's just finish out going over bad things happening to our characters here. I don't think anything bad happened to anybody else. I think that was it.
I think we can totally be in a state of denial about anything else. Roy got a little cold. That's kind of bad.
Oh, I remember what it is. Sarah got the shaft three times in her belly.
Too soon, man. Too soon.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, hey, just from a real world perspective here, Katie Lotz is on the show a lot this season. Guggenheim has said, just because we killed the character doesn't mean you won't be seeing that actor on the show anymore. So, you know, with flashbacks, you know, it's a great thing to do. But they actually, you know, they've come out and said, yeah, we really killed her. You know, usually we wait till towards the end of a season to do that with the character, and we wanted to change things up this season. And it's like, I'm just sitting there. It's like, okay, cool. We're going to finish off this. What the hell did they just do?
First episode.
Oh my gosh.
I think they made it clear that she died. You know, I mean, there's times when you're,
When she fell off the building and smashed her head on the garbage dumpster?
After getting shot by three gigantic arrows.
But, which probably poisoned.
They
were black arrows, so they probably were poisoned by the League of Assassins.
With scorpions on the tip, so they crawl inside of her, you know.
Oh, no!
If you think about some of the other characters who we thought might be dead, that wasn't so, dramatic and multi-stepped. You know, arrow through the eye.
No, I know. No problem. He's still alive. He got an arrow through the eye.
Arrow through the shoulder, chest area. Yeah, no, he's fine. He'll be all right. But then you look at a character that has died and has been confirmed that the first Count Vertigo.
Yes.
How did he die? Well, fell off a building, you know. And now Sarah, she's fallen off a building, and we saw her. Oh, and they buried her. So I guess was in the preview for next week, I think, though.
Spoiler.
I think it was in the preview. Part of the episode. If it's on the trailer, it's part of the episode.
I just, for this, I don't know. I can't. For some of the other shows that we talk about on our other podcasts, I can watch those previews, but I don't know. I just turn it off after this because it's like, I don't want to know.
I vow to you. Uh-huh. Okay, to not bring up the trailers anymore since I now know that you don't watch them. Unless I actually honestly did think they buried her in this episode, but then I remembered it was a trailer.
It does. So. Well, yeah, no, that's fine. I mean, it's for me, I don't know that it's that big a deal because I'm reading the descriptions of what's coming in the next episode anyway.
Okay.
But, you know, I mean, seeing the shots, and I probably should just stop watching those little teasers on any of the shows because 50% of the time they're misleading. Like they make it look like two characters are talking or doing something and they're not. You know, it's just some creative editing on the trailer editing people.
Yeah, so. But that's fun though. That's fun to kind of speculate what you think's going to happen. I like that part. But some people don't. I know. Some people are like, "Hey, that's not what it looked like."
Was she a great big fat girl? So we're under the agreement, and it's been kind of confirmed here by the producers as well. But she's dead, D-E-D.
Yep,
dead.
Dead ski.
Yeah. So, who do you think did it?
Okay. Well,
I mean, Barry Allen was in town.
That's true. And you know, he got abs. Maybe he had the ability for a real deep voice, too. Because of what I know is coming this season, does that count? I mean, am I allowed to even predict based on what I know? It still might not be true, I guess.
Well, I mean, speculation is speculation. I mean, I think we can all speculate on what's going on. I mean, I think, you know, we've heard casting announcements and stuff like that for certain characters. But I feel that there's enough room that I don't, like, for me, and I'm still waiting for you to say whatever you're going to say first.
Well, I think it was Ra's al Ghul.
Okay. Okay. That is my, I'm in agreement with that. Though, I believe the characters in the show and perhaps even other fans are thinking that it is Malcolm Merlyn.
Okay. I buy that.
Because the voice sounds very similar to the way Malcolm Merlyn's voice did when he was the Dark Archer. Mm-hmm. Dark arrows, you know, same kind apparently that he used. Though I don't know that people know that he's still alive. I'm trying to remember. Who knows he's still alive?
Well, Thea.
I forget who knows what.
Thea knows he's alive. Other than that, I'm not sure anybody. Because okay. Moira knew, but she's no longer with us.
She's not alive, yeah. I agree it's Ra's al Ghul. The coworker I was talking to about this thought it was Malcolm, and I said, yes, but I think it's Ra's al Ghul because we don't know why she was back in town. She wouldn't say why she was back in town because she didn't want to talk about it at that point, and please don't tell Dad, you know, because she didn't want to have to bring it up. So is she was on the run again from the League of Assassins, but what did she do? I'm like, did she kill Nyssa, perhaps?
I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Did she kill Nyssa? Did what? I thought of two other thoughts.
Yeah, did she steal, you know, some secrets? Did she just go back and say, I'm leaving the League of Assassins, you know, screw you, or whatever? I don't know. That's all real speculative. So what were you thinking
that? Having said Malcolm, then I got to thinking, you know, what would happen then. Now, we know Ra's al Ghul is going to be on the show. So maybe that's why he comes to Starling City, to find out who killed Sarah. And you know what? And you were wondering who knows about Malcolm Merlyn. Didn't Moira rat him out to Ra's al Ghul? Or at least to
Ra's
the League
knew.
Of Assassins?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was one of the reasons why Malcolm went to talk to Moira about that, I believe.
Okay.
You know, at the end of the episode.
I could go either way, and either way would be really cool. So, you know, who shot Sarah? It was one of three people in my mind right now, Ra's al Ghul or Malcolm Merlyn.
Okay.
Or Bobby Ewing.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, you know.
I'm just waiting for Oliver to step out of a shower and realize it was all a dream. So, it's a mystery, but I think it's one of the less interesting mysteries right now. Again, kind of knowing what might be coming here, I think that's that's a good idea.
I'm less interested in the mystery and more interested in the character development because of that.
Mm-hmm. Right. So speaking of the character development, I want to go back to this idea that this season is going to deal with Oliver and probably other characters trying to figure out their identity. Identity in a superhero show, you know, can obviously mean a lot of different things because you've got the secret identity where people are trying to protect their loved ones from the villains that would do them harm. The differences between, you know, like the Clark Kent versus the Superman character. And in this episode, Oliver's trying to figure out, you know, can he be the Arrow and can he be Oliver Queen at the same time? Guggenheim has a quote here that says, "This is the challenge or the struggle that he'll be dealing with over the entire season. Am I an Oliver Queen? Is there an Oliver Queen anymore? And there can be, and if there, and can there be, and if there can be, what does he look like? It's a real conundrum for him." So, just thinking about what we're seeing in the flashbacks, because we know that the way they work the flashbacks informs what's happening in the main storyline. What do you think, Oliver's going to discover about himself in these flashbacks that will then, you know, help him with his quest for identity in the main timeline?
Well, I think he's going to... Okay, so in the flashback, you know, he's... First of all, he's trying to escape from Waller in Hong Kong. And you know, a mysterious guy is... He keeps catching him. You know, yeah. Mysterious at first. We don't know who that is.
Maseo.
Yep. And then he... In the end, he wakes up in, you know, this guy's house with his wife and... You know, soon finds out a kid too, and he's starting to realize that his actions can affect other people in ways that he hadn't really thought of before. Now that he's understanding that, you know, Oliver's actions could affect this guy's family, but also this guy's actions. You know, whatever he's obviously got skills. Maseo has obviously got skills. And because of those skills...
And is working for Waller in some fashion. Yeah.
Because of those skills, it has put his family in danger. It has given him no choice. He has to use those skills for whatever they tell him. Otherwise, his family's in danger. Mm-hmm. So it's like it's like a blessing and a curse at the same time. And I think Oliver's kind of in that same position, which he realized with... You know, he found out with his mother, obviously, and I guess to a point, Tommy. That's not why Tommy died. Tommy died in an accident, but he's starting to realize that these people that he loves are in jeopardy because of that. And not only are the people, and they make a point of this in the show, but the city that he loves is suffering because of some of his actions.
Yeah. Yeah, they definitely there are several characters that point out that Starling City is dying. The talking heads on the television program at the beginning of the episode, Ray Palmer, they both call out the fact that Starling City is dying. And at this point, Oliver feels like he can't see it, or I feel like Oliver can't see it. The other interesting point that I wanted to add with your discussion about Oliver and, you know, the way that, you know, his actions impact other people. You know, his actions as Arrow impact his life as Oliver Queen as well. And I think that what the writers were trying to show us with his vertigo hallucinations, where he sees himself, I mean, that's... It's almost cliched that, you know, a character has to fight themselves, and it, you know, in television and film, it's always better to show than to describe, or show than tell, I guess. So, you know, they're actually depicting Oliver fighting the Arrow. And I think that, you know, he talks about, when he came back from the island, he had to kind of relearn how to look at people instead of being, you know, assets or, what was the other word he used? I guess like, you know, people that were out to kill him, basically, that he had to, you know, relearn to look at people just as people, right? And not as someone to be used or someone that was coming for him. So, you know, he has to look at himself the same way. Like he's relearning how to look at himself because he sees himself as either a target or as, you know, the one taking the action. He can't just be at this point.
He doesn't see that there's any gray area in between them. It's either one or the other, I think.
Right.
Well, it's either Arrow or... No, I guess I think it's either one or the other. That's what he's seeing, you know.
Yeah, that's his point.
I want to be ready if I'm ever in that situation, so I practice daily. I just look at myself and punch myself in the face, and that way, if I ever, you know, have vertigo in me or have to face it, it won't be a problem. I'll just beat myself up, no problem.
I am Jack's angry prostate. So,
hey, we're not supposed to talk about that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the first rule,
and the second rule too.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
But I think that we'll see this theme cropping up in a number of other episodes, and I think we should remember to kind of revisit this idea of identity and it's obviously not just going to be about his identity, because I think there's so many other characters that are tied to his identity. Like Thea is a big touchstone for him, and that's really the only other physical family that he's got, actual family that he's got, and he's lost her, right, because of his lies and
I want to come back to Thea in a second.
Okay,
but all right. What he needs to. Well, here I am analyzing like I have the answer, but I think he's going to explore this too, because before Sarah died, single tear, she was talking to him, and she told him, "We're not our masks," which is a little different than her attitude was most of the season last season. She's starting to realize that maybe she can be both, and I think she was giving him that advice, and probably would have helped him with that advice had she been around more. But I think he really does need to learn that you can do that. You don't have to save everybody. You need to start relying on others. And I think he's started doing that. I mean, look how well he works with this team of all these people that help him. Mm-hmm. So I think he just needs to start kind of delegating authority so he can be both. It's much more healthy for him to have some part of a normal life, but hey, there I am analyzing.
Which can be said for Lance, too. I mean, he needs to delegate and use his authority properly, because it would be more healthy for him. Everybody tells him to stay out of the field and stuff like that.
Yep.
Interesting thing about Sarah's quote, "We're not our masks." I think it also might relate just to anybody's public persona. I think that anybody, you go to work and you are... you're a certain person at work. There's the person you are at home with your family, in the comfort of your own home. There's the person you are to yourself and within your own skin. And then there's, the kind of the person that you show to the world. And just because you're the loud guy at the end cube at your office that's always talking about sports, doesn't mean that that's who you really are. I mean, you're more than just the 3-line bio that says, he was a good father and a good husband and, liked Star Wars or whatever. So
I'm a little depressed now, because that actually does sum me up pretty well.
I wasn't talking about you.
Oh, okay.
No, but it's, people, just in general, just let's remember that people are so much more than what they show the world. And I think that may be an important thematic element for it as well. Unfortunately for the characters in the show, I guess, but fortunately for us, every time some character imparts such true wisdom on one of these shows, they do end up dying immediately afterwards. So
there's your lesson for the day, kids, is don't try to help anybody.
Right. Just go about living your life. And
otherwise, you're going to get 3 arrows in the gut.
Yeah. You said you wanted to say some stuff about Thea, so let's revisit that.
Okay, well, just real quick.
Because we didn't really get anything with her for this episode, so...
It was kind of a flash, but in the pan there. But he, right out at the beginning, when they had come back from catching bad guy in the truck number one, which I was thinking, why can't they just shoot the tires out first?
Yeah.
But whatever. Anyway, because that wasn't as cool and dramatic and awesome.
That was a really cool scene. I really enjoyed that.
But didn't Oliver say he had just got a text from Thea?
Yes.
In front of Roy. And he said, "I keep telling her to send pictures." And then they kind of just let that go.
Yeah.
So do you think he's lying? Do you think he's just telling Roy that because he has absolutely no idea where Thea is and he doesn't
want Roy
to freak out?
I never even thought about that.
They never came back to that. I'm like, wait a minute. He said that. I'm like, wait a minute. I thought Thea was like pissed at him and didn't want to talk to him anymore. And she went off with Malcolm.
She did go off with Malcolm, but I figured she... So, okay, so my take on it was that Thea was actually texting Oliver just to keep him abreast of where she was. She said she was on the Amalfi Coast, but I thought it was that, yes, she's really texting him, but she's lying about what she's doing because she's actually wherever with Merlin training to be pissed at Oliver for the rest of her life, or, you know, something like that.
I would buy that if she wasn't so done with the family at the end of the season, last season.
Right. Well, I like your explanation a whole lot more than mine. That's brilliant. It's like, you know, because, of course, you just look at your phone, and it's like, oh, yeah, look, and then it's a text from Thea. Hey, can I see? No, that's cool. I'm just going to put this in my pocket now. Oh,
hey,
look over
privacy.
There. Oh, Vertigo. We got to go get him, you know, so.
Yeah, and Roy as well-trained as Roy is now, and digging the new costume, man.
It's very nice.
As well-trained as he is, he still seems a little bit off. He still seems a little bit moody. You know, he doesn't have the Mirakuru in him anymore, so we don't have to worry about that. But
yeah,
he wasn't.
That may just
maybe
Colton Haynes, the way that he is. I don't know. we'll have to see. But yeah, I felt there was a little something like he was taking the orders. Like Oliver was saying, do this, and he was doing it. And it's like, you go out on patrol tonight. And then Diggle's like, I'll go with him. And he's like, no, just wait here. Roy can take care of himself. And so it's like he is delegating, but not enough, right?
Yeah. And kind of throwing Roy under the bus. I mean, I guess Roy was fine, but, I mean, Roy might have wanted a buddy.
Going back to Oliver's flashbacks, which I can't see ending well for anybody. I don't think, you know, I think the arrangement that is set up there with the family, you know, it's like if Oliver screws up in some way or escapes or whatever, this guy is going to lose his family. I just feel that, again, that's foreshadowing too. Poor Maceo will, some things are not going to end well for him in some fashion.
Oh, you're probably right.
He was saying that Amanda Waller needs a man of his abilities, or maybe Waller was actually saying that to Oliver. It might have been in the previous scene where he's like, you know, I don't care. You can kill me. She, you know, obviously she does not. But he's been on this island for 2 years. He got some rudimentary bow and arrow training from Yao Fei in season one, and then season two, he learned, you know, a little bit more hand-to-hand combat and some other techniques from Shadow and from Deathstroke. I mean, is that what she's talking about? A man of his abilities, like these physical abilities that he's picked up on this island? Or is she talking about something else that he doesn't see in himself yet, potentially?
Yeah. See, I don't know. I don't know where she's going with this. Because to me, it seems like his abilities are not that impressive right now, you know. I mean
no,
he's
more
good.
So than Maceo's. I mean, he's I mean he's so good at parkour, running through the streets and stuff, but
maybe she wants him to, you know, enter American Ninja Warrior or something, just to you can do it. But I think maybe she sees some sort of potential in him. Oh man, that sounds lame. I can't even say it. See, I don't even have a good reason. It sounds lame when I say it. I don't know. I don't know what abilities she thinks he has. Unless maybe some sort of influence because of who he is, you know, maybe it had something to do with Robert Queen.
Right. So that's what I was thinking, because we knew that Robert Queen was involved with dealings in China, and that Lian Yu was near, you know, the mainland coast of China in some fashion. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It's interesting because obviously, you know, this ties into the whole, you know, larger picture. I mean, Oliver, you know, had said he was on the island for 5 years, but now he's like, well, you know, I wasn't really on the island for 5 years. And Felicity's says, yeah, I kind of figured that. And he was like, well, I was in Hong Kong for one. So it makes it sound like we're going to see him like get recruited. This is just my thought, but, you know, get recruited. He's going to be working with Waller, you know, doing missions of some kind. And maybe by that time we'll understand kind of what these abilities are that she covets in him. But, you know, I don't know. So, but I think he'll be showing up other places. And my whole thing right now is like, okay, we're midway through his island time. Like he'll be in Hong Kong, or, you know, this is probably most of the season, I'm guessing, at the Hong Kong thing. At some point here, he's only got 2 more years on the island after this year of Hong Kong. How does he get back on the island? Like, you know, he's going to piss Waller off enough that he gets thrown back to the island or something. I don't know. So
yeah, possibly. I mean, that's a very strong possibility. Or whatever she needs him. Oh, wait, now I just had a thought. What okay. if what she needs him for is on the island?
Oh, okay.
Because now he has experience being on the island. And so he knows.
Yes,
it.
He knows about different stuff on the island and potentially where things might be hidden.
And at some point, I think Amanda Waller. What's Amanda Waller's organization name?
Argus.
Argus, right? Argus has some sort of connection to the island. Now it may not be in this point in time, but we know that in a few years they're going to have a little prison facility there. Because that's
Purgatory.
Where they're holding Slade.
Yep.
So they may already have something there. So maybe it is connected to that. That didn't even occur to me until you just kind of put all that together just now. But
it's interesting. Yeah, that's true. I had forgotten about that part. So, one other thing I wanted to touch on. We're getting kind of low on time here, but. I had not noticed this over the last 2 seasons, but I noticed this year that the title card, the arrowhead on the title card, was way different than we had seen it last year. And so I went back and I looked at last year's and I'm like, okay, yeah, that's the arrowhead I was thinking of. And then I went back and looked at season 1 and I'm like, wait a second. The two arrowheads, the arrowhead from season 1 and the arrowhead from season 2, are very similar. But they are different. The season 1 arrowhead is a very rudimentary arrowhead, like you would actually make out of stone if you were trapped on an island. The season 2 arrowhead is a more refined metal-looking arrowhead. It's got the it's got two halves to it.
It's got a ridge down the vertical center,
as if it was made, you know, with metal working in some fashion, you know, a slightly more advanced one. The one this year is this really fancy, like, multi-pronged arrowhead with strange markings on it that don't appear to be Chinese, though it does have a Chinese vibe to it in terms of some stylistic elements, but it doesn't look, I mean, it's not like Chinese characters, but I don't know. And you saw what these look like, right? I'm going to post these on Facebook so people can take a look and see the differences and stuff. But
and I don't know what it symbolizes or anything, but it is a drastically different. It very much stood out to me when I first saw it, and I like the fact that they're changing them each season, just a little different arrowhead to kind of get the vibe. So maybe one season they can have like a boxing glove.
Well, if you've read the digital comics, the boxing glove arrow shows up in the new digital comics for season 2.5.
Yes, it
does. Yeah. So the other thing that we did not get that was conspicuous by its absence was the Oliver voiceover at the beginning of the episode.
I noticed that, too, because I was kind of looking forward to what he was going to say this time.
He has there's a voiceover in the first issue of the digital comic where he talks about, I mean, it's phrased in a similar fashion to the voiceovers from season 1 and 2, which were both slightly different. And I was like, oh, okay, that's going to be what he's going to be saying here in season 3. But that's, I mean, not at least in this episode. Maybe in future episodes they're going to do that. But I don't think he needs to do that anymore. I mean, I think we're beyond that part of the character arc for him to have those voiceovers. But I don't know. I kind of got used to him.
Yeah.
I kind of got used to skipping him, I guess.
Yeah. I can't decide if I will miss it or not, because that's one of those things. I'm always kind of the voiceover at the beginning. I'm never I'm never really that comfortable with them usually. It always sounds like the beginning of a Charlie's Angels episode or something. But but I kind of they kind of grew on me because I expected them, and I might kind of miss them. Again, it might just be the just on this premiere they didn't put it, but I doubt it because the premiere seems like the perfect place you would put it.
Yeah, I don't know. But again, it just was kind of conspicuous by its absence, I thought. So, all right. So I'd like to run down, boy, there are a lot of different references in the episode here. So if there's other stuff that we want to discuss as I touch on these, just let me know. Otherwise, I'm just going to kind of run down
List of references. I won't interrupt unless there's something I have to input.
Okay. This took me a little while to figure out what the song was that Vertigo was whistling because it was really familiar, and I was like, I'm pretty sure it was from Fantasia, which it was not. But after I exhausted those possibilities, I used the internet to its fullest and used some music tracking software to figure out that it was In the Hall of the Mountain King by Edvard Grieg, which is what he's whistling. So... maybe I'll post a link to that on
it's a good song.
Facebook. Yeah, it's as far as a classical piece goes, it's a relatively short classical piece running at just over 4 minutes, I believe. And it's nice because it starts off kind of soft and then it gets really crazy with the violin section in the middle and everything like that. If you guys haven't listened to it, check it out on YouTube. It's called In the Hall of the Mountain King by Edvard Grieg. Okay, so there were references to 52, which they seem to put in every episode. We had 52nd Street and then, of course, Channel 52, which is their news station. The bad guy they took down at the beginning in the truck was Vincent Steelgraves, which might be a reference to a DC character called Professor Steelgraves, who's a minor enemy of Green Arrow and Black Canary in the comics. We've already mentioned Maseo a little bit, full name Maseo Yamashiro. And in the comics, he is the husband of Tatsu Yamashiro, who eventually becomes the superhero Katana. And then, of course, his wife, as we were introduced to her, I don't know that we got her name in the episode, but I think we could assume that it is Tatsu who will become Katana at some point.
Just a quick side note, that actress was replaced at some point, right? This is the new actress. It was somebody
else.
Yeah,
so originally it was going to be Devin Aoki, who was in Sin City, in the Sin City movies. And it's she was replaced by this actress who was the younger girl sidekick character from The Wolverine, the movie where that takes place in Japan.
Right.
So even though we're in Hong Kong and China, these characters are Japanese, which is I don't understand how that works. But
well, you just fly to Hong Kong.
Oh, okay.
Amanda Waller is not Chinese.
That makes sense. And he keeps telling people he doesn't speak Chinese, and then she's like Japanese, but I speak it better than you speak Chinese. So. Let's see. One of the gang members first let's get to Werner Zeidel. That is Vertigo, and that is the current name of the Vertigo character in the comics, the most recent iteration, though he's not an older guy. So in the way the comics work, the original Count Vertigo was an older character. And the new Vertigo in the comics and the new 52 for Green Arrow is a younger character. So Arrow's kind of flipped that around. The first Vertigo, the Count, was the younger character, and now we've got this older guy. Played brilliantly by Peter Stormare from Fargo, Armageddon, and Minority Report. Those are some of the things people may have seen him in.
He needs to escape at some point and come back because great character.
Oh, well, one thing I did want to mention about him. So he mentioned that there will always be a Vertigo. Like, just because the Count died, you know, this character needs to exist you know, or at least that's what he intimated to Oliver at one point, which got me thinking, there are several characters that are, you know, bigger and mythic in the Arrow canon that, you know, is the show as well as the comic books and stuff like this, you know. And just because a villain or a character dies doesn't mean that that mantle, I think the word he used was mantle,
yeah,
won't be given on to somebody. So that relates back to characters that we've seen die in previous seasons, as well as to Sarah, right? The Canary will live regardless of who is the Canary, I believe. And again, I think that was a little more foreshadowing here.
Oh, interesting. I hadn't made that connection to Canary. That's good.
Yeah, so, and there's another character I'm thinking about, I want to see how this character plays out in the season 2.5 comic books right now. So maybe in a couple more weeks when the rest of those come out, I'll be more prepared to talk about
that. You're talking about the Russian maid, aren't you?
The Russian maid. Yes, there always must be a Russian maid. All right. So one of Zytel's gang members is named Greg Osborne. And in the comics, there's a character named Greg Osborne or Osborne that's a corrupt CIA agent and foe of Green Arrow. He was specifically in Green Arrow, the Longbow Hunters.
Then Dr. A classic comic.
Oh, a classic. Yes, definitely. Dr. Lockhart returns, the only doctor that appears to be working consistently in Starling City. This is his sixth appearance as the doctor that was checking Lila out during her pregnancy. This is also the one that's fixed Oliver's road rash and dealt with his mom. And
he's not even in Starling City. It's good business for him. He's
yeah, I mean, and you know, we saw a different doctor's office, right? It wasn't the queen wing like we normally see when we're at the hospital. So, we obviously got Ray Palmer, who is the alter ego of a superhero called the Atom, and we don't know if that character will, you know, ever show up. But he did have his cool belt buckle that turned into a projector, and in the comic books, the belt buckle is where the Atom kept his superpowers. That's where he had the device that allowed him to shrink and to grow and everything like that.
So cool.
Battlestar Galactica reference when Felicity utters "Ofrak," that was a very funny scene. Star City, Palmer talks about turning Starling City back into Star City, which is the original name of Arrow's hometown from the comic books, and the producers changed it to Starling City to make it a little more realistic. And so now there may be a chance that it actually will be going back to Star City, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Now, I just want to point out one thing. In the real world, I don't think that would fly because of Star Labs, which just had a horrific accident just a couple hundred miles away.
Yeah. Well, there are Star Labs in lots of cities. Like, I think there's a Star Labs, you know, facility there in Starling as well.
Oh, yeah.
As in Central City. But, yeah, the particle accelerator in Central City had some minor design flaws. Let's just leave it at that.
Minor.
There was reference to Ferris Air. There was a sign at the boxing match that was one of the sponsors, which is a reference to Green Lantern and the Green Lantern movie. And the Ferris Air logo also showed up in the Flash premiere. One of the boxers was wearing at the arena was wearing a Team Wildcat robe. So Wildcat is a professional boxer that ends up being a superhero, and we understand he will be that character of Ted Grant, a.k.a. Wildcat, will be showing up later in the season. So we'll see how that works out. Another one of the boxing match sponsors was Ostrander Rum, named after John Ostrander, one of the co-creators of the Suicide Squad and a writer of very many different comic books over the past 20 or 30 years. Laurel references Nanda Parbat. When she talks to Sarah, asks her how her time was. So that's kind of the mystical home of the League of Assassins. the arena that the boxing match was taking place at is the Rockets Arena. And the Starling City Rockets, as have been mentioned a couple times, are a baseball team, which is kind of weird that they're playing in this enclosed arena, but I don't know. And then we had, as I mentioned before, Barry Allen showing up in the kind of a precursor to the scene that we end up seeing in The Flash, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was interesting that they kind of snuck that in there, even though they didn't really need to, since The Flash had already been on. But
mm-hmm. It's I think they're doing, I think for the season premieres, it's I think both shows are having to do the setup that The Flash is saying, hey, we're in the Arrow's universe, and the Arrow is having to say, remember, we're in the Flash's universe, because there are going to be crossovers happening throughout the rest of the season between these two shows. So I think just, you know, just establishing that fact, it was a surprise. I didn't realize that they were going to have Grant Gustin back in the episode, so that marks his third time on the show now.
I don't think that should count.
You don't think it should count?
It wasn't very long. It was just
Okay. All right.
That's just me.
Maybe his second and a half.
Okay.
All right. So that was a pretty chocked full show. It was a calm episode with a lot of heavy undercurrents, I believe. So
yeah, I'll make this short, but I wasn't actually a big fan of this episode. I thought the episode itself overall was not that great. I thought there was a little bit too much in it, and there was some I don't want to say cheesy, because that's a little harsh, but just out of character of the series overall. But having said that, on the other side, within the episode were tons of amazing story possibilities, which I really, 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 really liked. So I'm not giving this a thumbs down by any means, but it was just it was not what I expected at all. It was very surprising.
There have been more season premieres, though, I will say. I think, especially with a show like this that has so many different characters, it can make season premieres tricky, because you really need to touch base with a lot of your main characters. And even if that means for only a few minutes of screen time, you know, there are certain characters, like your main character, that are going to, you know, you're going to need to talk about a lot and revisit with a lot. But, you know, we need to find out about so many different characters. It can lead to, the letdown syndrome, where, you know, everybody wants to spend time with their favorite character, and there's only so much time in the episode.
Right.
So, okay, well, that's cool. I think that pretty much does it for this week's episode of Green Justice, and I'm glad you guys were all have come back for season three here.
I'm glad to have you guys back. I'm glad to have new listeners, and I'm glad to be talking with you, for sure, because it's a blast, and I'm looking forward to this season. We hope you guys enjoyed our episode of Green Justice, and if you did, make sure you leave feedback for us on iTunes. Looking for those good reviews. And also, let us know what you think. Contact us at email at greenjustice@randomchatter.com or on Twitter at greenjusticepod, and you can visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/greenjusticepodcast.
You can also check out all the other podcasts that Josh and I do, which I don't know how we do it in the amount of time that we have to do them in, but we've got Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files and Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast, which is our newest edition, and we're really excited about that one. Those are all available via randomchatter.com. All shows can also be found in the iTunes Store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And of course, if you enjoy this podcast, please be sure to tell your friends about us. And remember, if you don't keep listening, you have failed this city.
This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.